Before I went to seminary, I studied social work, and I loved and still actually love this call to advocacy and justice. Might not be a surprise to many of you. So that book I shared with our kids this morning is actually a book I've had since my sophomore year of college, an early part of my social work days, and I have a poster of it as well. I love the bright colors of Todd Parr, the colors that he brings to our world, these simple, goofy drawings that make us laugh. And in the middle, somewhere in there between macaroni and cheese and aliens, he has these profound statements of love and acceptance and silliness. My very first day as pastor, very, very first day, Trinity Lutheran Church, Moorhead, Minnesota, I hung the poster of this book on my office door. And every single staff person that walked by it paused and went, huh. And I found it really odd, but I couldn't put my finger on why. And a few months later, I finally figured it out, that it's okay to be different. Different is Midwestern passive-aggressive code for, I do not like that. Your bright cream pants? Oh, that's different. Your casserole with both marshmallows and broccoli? Well, that's different. Asking people to reflect and talk during your sermons? Well, Pastor, that is different. You get the idea. These Scandinavian prairie folks, change was really hard for them. Most folks grew up in that town, went to one of the three colleges in that town, got married, and then their kids went to school in that town. Moorhead was a very insular community, surrounded by prairie chickens and wide blue skies. And it was a huge challenge to feel welcome and grounded when I felt different. Here in Arlington, almost everyone I meet is not originally from Arlington. There are a few of you Arlingtonians in the mix, but most of us are from somewhere else. So I think that helps with our tolerance of differentness, but we're not immune to it. Someone behaves different, looks different, loves different, believes different. Even the best of us, these differences throw us off balance, might cause tension in our bodies, a flight-fright reaction. Or maybe our first instinct is to just put some distance between us and them. Last week, I asked you to think about a cozy place. This time, I want you to take a minute to reflect on a time when you felt different, uncomfortable, out of place. What made you different? And what made you notice this? Which of your attributes made you feel this way? Take a minute. Think about different.
Thank you. seminary,
Austin Harkey was in seminary before he decided to fully come out as transgender. And he wrote in his book, Transforming, that coming upon this text that we read today in Isaiah was revolutionary as he wrestled with this question. Is it possible to be different? Is it possible to be transgender and still welcomed in Christian community? The book of Isaiah was created over a period of about 2 centuries, beginning with the late 8th century BCE. And because it was written over such a long period of time, we think it was written by at least 3 people. And we see these stylistic cues and historical references that scholars, this is pretty common knowledge, that there's 3 different authors. And for 1st Isaiah, chapters 1 through 39 were written as the United Kingdom of Israel was being split into 2 kingdoms, Israel and Judah. And both of these kingdoms were powerful kingdoms with large wealth disparities. Each had this habit of going to war against neighbors unprovoked in hopes of gaining more resources. So Isaiah part 1 is about a warning to the people. God is not pleased about this, how they've abandoned the oppressed, widows, perverted justice for their own gains. And God would release a terrible vengeance on these 2 communities. And no one listened to the prophet Isaiah. Surprise, surprise. And so God's people were attacked and ravaged, first by the Assyrian Empire and then the Babylonian Empire. Family members were intentionally split up and enslaved. Rulers were imprisoned or killed, homes were burned, and the temple, God's holy resting place, the one place they knew they could see and meet God, was demolished, including the Ark of the Covenant. All of this destroyed. Isaiah part 1. Isaiah part 2, chapters 40 through 55, spoke tenderly to the people who were enslaved and now in exile. We often hear these passages at Advent, comfort, oh comfort my people. And there was this promise that God would make a way for them to return home. In Isaiah part 3, this is where the promise comes true. The people of Israel and Judah come out of Babylon and return home. And it begins with this chapter, chapter 56. And it's full of comfort. And there's also some frustration and disapproval as Isaiah kind of does this babysitter with too many toddlers kind of thing. It's hard work to become a community again, this work of rebirth and rebuilding. When these folks return home, they're stumped on what to do about a temple. What rules do they hold on to and what rules do they let go of? Generations of priests and families had been wiped out. And so who will lead them? And what about rules around marriage? Because intermarriage was forbidden, and yet these people have been in exile for a long time. And so now these families are intermingled. And what about the eunuchs? Deuteronomy had clear rules about stopping eunuchs from entering the assembly. And yet now many of their own had been held captive and enslaved. Many had been castrated and put into service in Babylonian courts, meaning they could not have children. And at the time, the ability to produce offspring was such an intrinsic part of the Israelite identity. Abraham and Sarah, you know, the blessing with many stars. This seemed like a non-negotiable. When eunuchs experienced the physical cutting off that changed their identity, they also experienced a cutting off from their community, from their future, from their culture. And yet here in this text in Isaiah 56, this third part of Isaiah, as they are coming home, God proclaims through Isaiah this new vision for these traumatized people. One where our bodies are not an obstacle to being included, but something to be celebrated as essential and important. I will give my house within my walls a monument and a name better than sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. There will be love and joy and care and a house of prayer for all peoples that God will gather. Austin Harkey goes into great detail in his book in this about this chapter of Isaiah. And if this inspires you, I hope you'll join me. We're going to read his whole book this summer, Transforming. I put 10 copies in the hallway. You want to grab it now or later, not right now, but you know. But in the meantime, I want to leave you this little snippet. He writes, "Through Isaiah, God gave me a sense of belonging that I couldn't shake. I believe that by declaring those outside the gender binary to be acceptable, God declared me to be acceptable. When I read that eunuchs would be made joyful in God's house of prayer, I find myself convinced that transgender people are meant not only to survive in Christian community, but to thrive in it. It is that combination of affirmation and a shared narrative that can give transgender Christians the courage to carve out a space for themselves in a global church that often ignores or actively persecutes them. To know that you belong to a God who gathers the outcasts and who commands doors to be opened before those sitting outside the gates, this is the kind of love that leads to liberation. God did not ask the eunuchs to pour themselves into the mold of an Israel previous societal norm, nor to bend themselves to fit by taking on specific gender roles in the current system. Instead, God called for a transformed community that looked nothing like the people had ever seen. A transformed community, something ancient and yet always being made brand new. Affirmed. That's our word for today. Something we say in our welcome statement, and it's this bold proclamation of this celebration of differentness. It makes me think of my camp counselor days. You know, camp is a magical place. It can be hard, it's not always easy, but we had this tradition on the last day of every week of camp of doing affirmations. And it happened like clockwork. After spending 5 days with these campers, these strangers I had never met before, somehow we magically became this close-knit, intentional Christian community. And I think it was just about being in relationship with each other, you know, praying together, reflecting on the Bible stories, hiking and being bitten by mosquitoes, eating way too many carbohydrates, sharing space, and also stinky socks. There was always, they talk about like communities, there's norming where we all get to know each other, there's forming, and then there's storming. We have to have some good fights. And that always happened on Thursday night. There were always tears on Thursday. But somehow from that storm, we would always flip back up, always being made new in this community. And so Friday mornings before the families would arrive to pick them up with their stinky socks, hopefully, we'd make a big circle and we would do this ritual. And so I'd have this big skein of yarn and I would hold the end and I would throw it to someone in the circle and say something that I saw in them, something that made them different and beautiful. And then they would hold on to the yarn and throw it across at someone else in the circle and so on. And so the yarn got tossed around and so it made this big spider web in the middle. And as we're holding this yarn with this giant spider web of gifts, of uniqueness, I would name the truth that we would never be this particular community again, but we would be changed by it, and we would carry these experiences and stories with us wherever we go. And so I cut a piece of string for everyone, and we'd tie it around our wrist or ankle and leave. But I think about that web sometimes. I think about the web of Faith Lutheran, all of our unique gifts, the things that make us different. And I think because of this interconnectedness of relationships, the norming and storming we go through, it builds this kind of net where we can hold one another through the sorrows and hard times, and also the joy and laughter. A hodgepodge family of sorts. And I think that's what Isaiah is picturing here too. Just like the eunuchs, God looks at our differences and refuses to say we are worthless, we're only a dry tree, only good for kindling. God sees us and says, you matter. Your unique gifts and differences are what we need in this place. So, dear ones, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I want you to hear that we affirm all of who you are. I want you to take your lists back out, the things that you drew or reflected on that make you different. And I want you to put a heart on them. Huh? I want you to know that all of who you are matters to God. All of it. Even the parts that frustrate you, that you wish were different than they are, you are created just the way you are with purpose and intention. And no one can take that away from you. May we carry this song outward and onward to a world that desperately needs to hear it, and a world that craves sameness. We have this different message to share. We are enough, dear ones. And so together we proclaim we are beloved, we are accepted, we are affirmed. Amen. Thanks be to God.